You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
This episode brought to you by PetFlow, the leader in pet food and supplies.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
You're as cautious as any parent of a human child when it comes to the health and welfare of your four-legged charges. But could the world around you be conspiring to expose your pet to toxins? What are some of the most common poisons your pet may encounter? How would you know if your pet's been sickened? Can you avoid the possibility of inadvertent toxic exposures? Dr. Robert Papengay, a veterinarian and head of the toxicology section of the California Animal Health and Food Safety Laboratory System at the University of California, Davis, will help answer these questions and more. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Join the Dog Ring Revolution. If you love your dog and want to take them everywhere you go, now you can with Dog Ring. Dog Ring is a hands-free way to include your dog in more activities and give you the freedom to take your dog almost anywhere. It's a safe and easy way to secure your dog. It clips around trees, posts, and poles in seconds. It's lightweight, portable, and strong. It has a free sliding leash which allows your dog to run around without getting tangled up. Perfect for parks, picnics, barbecues, camping, lounging outside, and furry fun adventures everywhere. Now you can be part of the Dog Ring Revolution. Visit thedogring.com and sign up for our Kickstarter campaign. Registration is now open. Go to thedogring.com. That's thedogring.com.
It's the Daily Doorbusters from PetFlow, the leader in pet food and supplies. Opportunity knocks every day with hundreds of products offered at huge, huge discounts. Up to 80% for your furry best friends. And delivered right to your door. Go to PetFlow.com/PetDoc. These deals last for one day only, so act fast. 150 brands to choose from. Pet food, treats, toys, and more items than you can shake a tail at. And get free shipping and orders of $39 or more. A new deal every day. Get your paws on today's PetFlow Daily Doorbusters deal. Go to PetFlow.com/PetDoc now.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Papengay, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
So, number one, how common are poisonings in our household pets?
Well, unfortunately, they're fairly frequent. You know, I think that there are two different poison control centers that are devoted to animal calls, and they each get literally thousands of calls a year. So certainly there are a lot of hazards around a home or yard for pets, and quite a long list of things that they might actually be exposed to that can be harmful to their health.
Now, let's start in the kitchen. What would be some things that people might not consider that are in the kitchen that could be toxic to your pet? Not maybe just cats and dogs, but other little creatures that are in the house.
Well, I think when you start in the kitchen, you generally think about food, and there are a lot of food items that can potentially be a problem for pets in a household. And one thing about pets, particularly dogs, they don't have an off button when it comes to access to food, so they tend to gorge on whatever's available, and that can present a problem in terms of the amount that might be ingested. But some common food items that have been associated with pet illnesses, fortunately, some of these are not all that common, but in dogs, grapes are associated with problems with the kidneys. The incidence is quite low, but there are some animals that do develop renal problems secondary to grapes. Macadamia nuts, you know, we eat those all the time, and They're generally considered non-poisonous, but for dogs that get into macadamia nuts, they can cause a transient change in some blood parameters that makes the dog sick. You know, caffeine, theobromine in chocolate. I think a lot of pet owners realize that chocolate is bad for dogs. The baking chocolate, which is a very concentrated form of chocolate, is the biggest hazard, and most of the time that doesn't taste very good.
One of the truffles you'd get from Godiva.
Or the baking chocolate that you buy in the big bars in the store to bake with. Milk chocolate can be a problem, but it's not quite as hazardous as some people think. I mean, I certainly wouldn't rush to call a veterinarian if a 70-pound lab ingested a Hershey's Kiss or part of a Snickers bar. But if you have a small dog, for example, maybe a poodle or Boston Terrier that has access to a pound of Hershey's Kisses, that might be sufficient to cause a problem. The higher risk is with the more concentrated chocolates, the semi-sweet and the baking chocolates. You know, if you have any questions, you should always call your veterinarian and get their advice. There's another very interesting kitchen hazard that's food. You know, we have a lot of diabetics that have to look at sugar substitutes, and there's a sugar substitute called xylitol that can be put into baked goods, and there are, or gums, a lot of different uses. And dogs that ingest a lot of xylitol can develop liver problems, and they seem to be very uniquely sensitive to that adverse effect.
And you're exactly right. Dogs definitely like to eat first, think later. And it's like, maybe I shouldn't have eaten that, but oops, too late. And sometimes it's hard to tell how much your pet got into. So I think it's always so important, when in doubt, definitely call your veterinarian. And as you're mentioning, there are some specific pet poison hotline services that you can use. Not a good idea to call 911 or call your human poison control, because it's not the same dogs, cats, or people.
That's correct. And even dogs and cats are different in terms of their sensitivity to certain things. And the animal poison control centers have the expertise to help out, whereas the human poison control centers may not have that expertise.
Dr. Papengay, I know that one of your areas of expertise is food safety and talking about being in the kitchen. Clients come to me and oftentimes, you know, say, what are you feeding? I'll always ask as part of the history, what's the pet's usual diet? And many times they're very proud to tell me, oh, I'm feeding this very expensive raw food. I personally have my opinions. What are yours about raw foods and pets?
Well, as a toxicologist, I'm probably not the best person to ask with regard to the raw food diets.
No, you might be the best person to ask.
Well, maybe, but I think in terms of chemical exposure, I'm not aware of significant risks associated with that. I think the biggest concern certainly is with bacterial contamination and some of the nasty bugs like salmonella. You know, I'm not aware, for example, pesticide residues or other issues related necessarily to the rawness of the food.
Okay. Oftentimes when people think about toxins, they think about man-made toxins. But there are some natural toxins out there that can be a problem for our cats and dogs, correct?
There are a number of naturally occurring compounds, and you know, I think people do tend to think if it's natural, it's less toxic, but actually some of the more toxic chemicals occur naturally in plants, for example, or mushrooms. Those are two common sources of exposure of pets around a home that get out in the yard, or if an owner takes their animal out for a long walk, particularly off-leash, sometimes they can get into things that they shouldn't get into. I think in California, mushrooms, toxic mushrooms, are a significant issue with dogs. In fact, we've had a couple of cases from the Bay Area just this past week where dogs got into very toxic mushrooms. And unfortunately, you know, that is a very serious illness that a lot of dogs don't survive. And these are the same types of mushrooms.
What would be the signs?
Well, you know, very, very often it is just very nonspecific signs initially, just some vomiting and maybe a little abdominal pain and diarrhea. And oftentimes animals get over that for a short period of time, but then the toxin in the mushrooms does significant damage to the liver, and then they become very sick from that liver failure. And unfortunately, that's often when they're presented to the veterinarian, you know, at that point where it's fairly far advanced. And unfortunately, a lot of times the owners don't notice the dog out in the yard and maybe inadvertently eat one of these mushrooms, and it can only take one mushroom to result in a fatal outcome.
Sometimes it's so hard because we're talking about, you know, vomiting, diarrhea, upset stomach. And that's pretty part and parcel for what walks through the door in my practice. We see a lot of it. So if a client has a pet, maybe a little bit of an upset stomach, when should the warning bells go off? What should they do as they think, or maybe they've even seen some type of exposure to a toxin? How should they handle it? What do they need to tell the veterinarian? How do they need to work together?
You know, I think one of the key things is sort of knowing what is in the animal's environment. I mean, that can be difficult, you know, in terms of mushrooms that are sporadic in terms of when they come up. But, you know, certainly there are some toxic plants. For example, oleander, which is very common in California, can cause heart damage. The cycad palms can cause liver damage. Easter lilies can cause renal damage in cats, not in other species. So, you know, I guess taking a step back, I think it's very important to just be aware of what is in the animal's environment, what kind of pesticides are used, you know, what garden products might be used. And then if an animal becomes sick, your veterinarian may ask what might be in the animal's environment that it might have gotten into, even though you didn't notice it getting into something. And your veterinarian hopefully then could say, well, you know, the clinical signs maybe are associated with exposure to this particular product that's in the animal environment, or even a, you know, a plant that may be in the household. It's very tough, I think, sometimes when the signs are very nonspecific. And that's why sometimes animals present to veterinarians when they're very, very sick, particularly when there is no known exposure to a toxic substance.
If a veterinarian has, for instance, someone myself, has a pet that presents and there is a questionable history, or I know they got into metaldehyde, snail bait, for instance, I can go online, look at various resources. Someone such as yourself, can veterinarians call your service to get some guidance, or what would be the way that they would typically handle it?
Well, your veterinarian does have a number of different resources, and, you know, for certain things, they probably see cases on a regular basis and don't have to consult on the outside with a poison control center or with our laboratory. A good example there is with an anticoagulant rodenticide, very commonly used, causes bleeding problems. A lot of veterinarians have seen cases and can identify them fairly quickly. Other things are a little bit more challenging. Certainly the poison control centers, they're 24/7. They've always got people there that can provide information to the veterinarian. Probably a good idea to have the veterinarian call, or even the pet owner can call. Our laboratory, during the day, we have toxicologists on duty, and we can answer questions as well. I think our laboratory oftentimes provides information to the veterinarian in terms of what samples to submit to our lab to confirm exposure to a metaldehyde, for example, or an anticoagulant rodenticide. So we offer toxicology testing here that can confirm a suspicion if there's no known exposure.
You were talking a little bit earlier about cycads, the palm that pets will sometimes chew on the pods and get an exposure that way. I found it interesting because this isn't anything new. Oftentimes people think that these toxins, environmental toxins or man-made toxins, really are a fairly new phenomena. But if I'm correct, even dinosaurs way back when were exposed to these almost Superfund sites like Yellowstone, for instance, with their spewing volcanoes and having that ash all over, or conifers, pine trees, and cycads, these palms. They've been around and causing problems for a long time, haven't they?
Well, probably for centuries. And, you know, I think it's hard to know when the first animal poisoned itself by eating something that it shouldn't have. You know, I think, you know, these are not new, although there are always new things that are recognized. And, you know, the example I go back to there is xylitol. Probably 5, 6, 7 years ago, that wasn't really something that was common in a household. So new things crop up all the time, even though we're still dealing with poisons that have been around for really centuries.
What can people do to help safeguard themselves? I know one of the things that somewhat drives me crazy, I love gardening, and I know there are certain plants that are toxic, and I'll go to a nursery and I'm looking at plants. I rarely see any plant that's labeled saying will be toxic to pets.
Yeah, you don't have a label on a lot of these natural products like plants, or a mushroom isn't going to hold up a little sign saying I'm toxic. I think the key with garden plants and pesticides is probably to do a little bit of research before you actually use the product. I think, you know, for those that are concerned about, for example, metaldehyde, if they have a slug problem. Metaldehyde is very toxic to dogs, but there are some alternatives that are a lot safer. There are some products out there that have iron phosphate in them, and that seems to be effective. So there are a lot of natural products that have lower toxicity. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, being aware of what the options are. And if you decide to use something that has some toxicity, you know, make sure you read the entire product label and make sure you use it according to what the label directions are, because those instructions are there to minimize the risk as well as to improve the efficacy of the product.
And I think that's great information, Dr. Papengay, because oftentimes if you look and going, wow, I'm just supposed to add a teaspoon of this concentrate to a gallon of water. Ugh, that's not going to work. Here, let me go ahead and add a cup. In reality, you may be poisoning the environment, poisoning your pet, wasting money. So you're right. Follow directions are so important.
Right. I think that's a key, and, you know, not overdo it with regard to the product. But, you know, I think we're fortunate now that at least with lawn chemicals, there are a lot of safer alternatives out there. And a lot of things have been taken off the market due to toxicity. It used to be probably 10 or 15 years ago, you could buy some very potent pesticides to use around the garden. And I think one good thing is that we've tended to come up with safer products, and most of that has been driven by human health concerns, but the side benefit is that if it's safer for humans, generally it's going to be safer for pets as well.
We're talking right now to Dr. Robert Papengay. He is the head of toxicology section, it's a mouthful, the California Animal Health and Food Safety Laboratory System, University of California, Davis. We're going to take a short little break because I want you to pay attention to something that's important, because we've been talking about something important for your pet, toxins, and trying to make sure that you're only offering safe and having a safe environment for your pet. But sometimes trying to find these safe things, a little easier said than done. One of the things that I've now found as finding a source for products I'm using for my own pets is PetFlow.com. It's the internet's leader in pet food delivery services. PetFlow offers pet food and supplies from over 150 leading brands. Delivery right to your door. You can even set up recurring shipping options so you don't have to worry about running out of things at the last minute and going to the store. They have a huge selection of various products. They also have something that's a lot of fun. It's a daily doorbusters. Daily deals on hundreds of products up to 80% off. You can order from the comfort of your home, saving time, money, no heavy lifting. Again, 150 different brands, including prescription pet foods and treats. So go to petflow.com/petdoc and you'll get free shipping on all orders over $39. Site-wide, no exclusions. Give them a try. Dr. Papengay, you mentioned something I thought that was very interesting, that our pets have actually benefited from people being so concerned with their own safety and the safety also of our environment. Isn't it true that pets or animals in general can sometimes be sentinels to human health? So various toxins that are in the environment that maybe people weren't aware of, but the effects are being concentrated in these animals, and we're going, oh, there's a problem here.
Well, I think there are some good examples of that. We don't see lead as much of a problem anymore because lead has been taken out of a lot of the products like paints and that type of method of exposure. But lead was a good example. Very often, dogs or cats were lead intoxicated due to the fact that they, particularly cats, they would maybe walk through a building that was being renovated or repainted, and there's old lead-based paint that had been sanded, and they'll walk through that sanded paint and pick it up on their paws and then lick their paws and become intoxicated with lead. And sometimes the diagnosis is first made in the pet that there's a problem because they become sick first. But then if there are children in that same environment, it's always a good idea then to have the children tested, because children tend to put things into their mouths, especially young children, and be exposed that way. So I think that's probably an excellent example. The other type of situation that is sort of an emerging problem, probably most people that spend much time on water, particularly in the summer months, will notice a sort of a greenish scum on the water. And that's generally an algal bloom where the algal cells are rapidly dividing, but those algae can produce toxins. And sometimes it's the animal that actually goes in swimming in a body of water. And as animals, particularly dogs are likely to do. They lap up some water as they swim around. And we've had cases of animals that got very sick from swimming in a body of water, and that alerted the public authorities to the fact that that body of water then would be a problem for people swimming in the same water. So those are a couple of examples.
The toxicology section that you had, do they also deal with wildlife? Because we're talking here about a dog, a pet swimming in a body of water, getting exposed. But for instance, I think it was back in 1982, where in Canada, northeastern Canada, the St. Lawrence Estuary, beluga whales were washing ashore dying of cancers. Now, does your group work with wildlife also?
Well, we do a lot of wildlife work, and we run a lot of tests on wildlife. They tend to be very often exposed to different types of chemicals. Now, there are different chemicals sometimes that are used in an agricultural environment where wildlife may be more likely to be exposed than in an urban or city environment. But, you know, they can be exposed to a number of different things. You know, just talking about lead in dogs and cats, we don't see that many dogs and cats that are poisoned anymore with lead. That's because the lead has been cleaned up in their environment. But we do see major problems with lead in the California condor, for example. And that source of lead is entirely different than what one would anticipate in dogs and cats. The condors are scavengers. They will scavenge an animal that has been killed with a lead bullet, and those bullets fragment. And as the scavenger is eating on that particular dead animal, they accidentally ingest lead fragments, and that has resulted in a major problem in condors. So, yeah, there are a number of different environmental toxicants that maybe pets wouldn't be exposed to, but that wildlife would be.
How about some of the long-term consequences of exposure? I know DDT, for instance, that's something that you rarely hear about anymore. I think it was banned about 30 years ago. Are products like DDT still causing problems for animals and people in the environment, or is that now just old hat and no longer a concern?
No, I think there's still some concern with the pesticides similar to DDT. Those haven't, as you said, been used for a long number of years, and so we run into those less frequently. But there are a number of other chemicals that are very persistent in the environment. One good example, and it's received a lot of attention, are flame retardants. Once those are in our bodies, they tend to stick around for quite some time. And flame retardants are found in furniture. And since a lot of pets, you know, spend a lot of time on furniture, there's some concern that maybe they're being exposed, and sort of gets back to being maybe a sentinel for human health issues. The difficulty with some of those types of compounds is, you know, we can detect them, but knowing exactly what kind of adverse effect they cause, that's a lot harder to, you know, to ferret out. And cause and effect is not quite so easy as it is with an acute toxicant, like a toxic mushroom, for example.
What are some other common household toxins that pets are exposed to? Medications or something that people are using that inadvertently a pet's getting exposed to?
Well, I think prescription drugs, over-the-counter drugs, even illicit drugs, I mean, that's a big category. And if you look at the Animal Poison Control Center data, drug exposures are relatively common. So this could be an over-the-counter drug like a cold preparation. Cats are very sensitive to a very common analgesic, acetaminophen. I think a lot of pet owners are aware that the acetaminophen, which is found, you know, the trade name would be Tylenol, one trade name, although there are a number of products that contain acetaminophen. Interestingly, some drugs that weren't popular 10 years ago that are prescribed more frequently, like drugs to help people sleep or to control depression, they're more commonly found in households than animals, particularly dogs, are more commonly going to get into them. Illicit drugs can be a problem. There's lots of animals that come into veterinarians that have probably been exposed to marijuana in one form or another. And we've had dogs come in for testing here in our lab that have gotten into methamphetamines. And there are some prescription amphetamines as well to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And they're much more commonly found in a home environment. So I think that's one big category that people need to be aware of, and make sure that they store their prescription or over-the-counter drugs, you know, just like they would if they had kids in the household. Make sure they're put up and out of the way and not accessible by the pet.
And it's so important. Thank you for bringing up the subject of illicit drugs. There have been too many times working in the practice where people have brought in a pet that's been exposed, and it kind of looks like a spaced out, drugged out dog or cat, and you'll ask, and oh no, I have no idea what it got into, and you start asking a little bit further, a little bit more, and saying, look, I don't care. I'm just trying to save your pet's life. What could it have gotten into? Any chance of some type of a drug it shouldn't have? Going, well, yeah, I got into my stash, or it got into this. And that's so important. Be upfront with the veterinarian. Let them know. They're not going to call the police on you. It is important, or animal control. It is important for them to know so they can treat your pet and not lose time. Because correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Papengay, marijuana can kill a pet.
It can, and, you know, I guess the only saving grace is that marijuana is not as acutely toxic as a lot of other things. So it can certainly make your animal sick and show signs for quite some time. And in relatively infrequent cases, result in death if it's a large ingestion. But that seems to be one of the common illicit drugs that pets are, you know, exposed to. And sometimes, unfortunately, that's intentionally as well. You know, people might think it's fun to see what happens to their pet if I give them a little bit of marijuana.
Or even alcohol.
Right.
You have friends over for the football game, whatever, and you're all drinking your beer, and oh, look, you know, the pet likes drinking that beer, and now they look drunk. They can run into problems with that very easily.
Right.
You might not see the end of that game because you're running off to the emergency clinic, so don't let them get into that stash of yours or into that beer of yours or alcohol either. Dr. Papengay, can you think of anything else in particular that you go, yes, I see this so much. It's so important for people to realize this can be a toxin. Make sure their pet does not have exposure.
Well, in terms of, you know, around the house, you know, I think one thing that people may not be aware of, and we haven't talked a lot about cats, but, you know, during certain times of the year, there might be an Easter lily or some other lily in the household. Cats only have to take one or two bites of the lily to cause severe kidney damage. A lot of people have rodent problems, and, you know, there are some very toxic products out there to control rodents. Actually, it's rather interesting. There's a movement away from household use of the anticoagulant rodenticides, which are very common, to some alternatives that might actually be more problematic in terms of adverse effects. So, you know, just being, again, just reading the label, making sure you maybe do a quick Google search to find out if a dog or cat are uniquely sensitive to something, and, you know, just inform yourself about what is in your animal's environment, just as you would with your own environment.
Are there some animals that are uniquely sensitive to specific poisons?
Well, I mentioned acetaminophen, Tylenol, and cats. And unfortunately, a lot of people that are not aware of it think, well, my cat isn't feeling so well, so I'll just give them a little half a tablet of Tylenol. That can be lethal to a cat, an average-sized cat. The xylitol in dogs is another rather unique. Why dogs are sensitive, nobody really knows, but they are. So those are some good examples of where some things are very toxic for a dog and maybe not so toxic for a cat, or vice versa.
How about a bird?
Well, birds, we do occasionally see birds, and going back to discussion on kitchens, you know, we never recommend that you put a bird in a kitchen because of their unique sensitivity to things that can be inhaled, specifically cookware that's coated with Teflon. If that's put on a stove with nothing in it, it heats up very rapidly and can start to degrade, and those fumes from the degrading Teflon can kill a bird in a matter of minutes. Well, that's a good example of, you know, where birds can be poisoned in the home. Birds are very sensitive to avocado. We all eat avocado, but you wouldn't want to feed your parrot pieces of avocado because it can damage their hearts.
You would think, you know, tropical animal eating avocado would be good for them, good source of oils. Something important to know. We've been talking right now with Dr. Papengay, veterinarian and head of the toxicology section of the California Animal Health and Food Safety Laboratory System at University of California, Davis. He's given us some great information on knowing that things around the house, even natural things, can be toxic to your pet. So when in doubt, read labels, call your veterinarian, ask, know the number for your local pet poison control, have that on your refrigerator or speed dial on your smartphone. These are all things that can save your pet's life. Dr. Papengay, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
So please listen again next week to The Pet Doctor. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz with The Pet Doctor. We'll be back next week with more information on how to help you be that best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.